You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Ron Athey. Ron, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I want to talk about a lot of your work, perhaps, and discuss different details, but what is it that you're working on at the moment? What are you currently involved in any respect?
In a way, what I'm working on now, it's called Gifts of the Spirit, and it's kind of a hybrid of an opera and an installation and an experiment and automatism. So it uses 35 participants and based on text, kind of taken from my childhood memoir, from the Pentecostal stories. 16 writers write a new text. It's been typed up by 6 typists and then cut up, edited into a collectively authored text, which is performed back by some vocalists we're using, such as Carmina Escobar. So it has a lot of blow. It has,
so let's talk about automatism for a minute.
So
you can tell me more about it, but just the automatism, the text itself, because you're kind of, as you're developing, that sounds like something of a sacred text, right? I mean, similar to, like you're saying, you were writing about, but
yes,
in your upbringing under that, but these are the kind of way, I guess it's in the Old Testament, right? Texts are written from...
Based on the gift, automatic writing is used, by the spiritualists, by the Pentecostals. It's also the root of surrealism, which happened at the same time as English, the high English spiritualism. Breton wrote the magnetic field. So
that was happening at the same time as automatic writing, you're saying?
It would have came directly from there. So being kind of still doing all kinds of esoteric and occult studies, the 6 years I lived in England, which was until about 2 years ago, I found these connections interesting, how many things weren't purely Pentecostal that I had been trained in, but they're actually spiritualist church, descrying, crystal ball scrying, black mirror scrying, and then all types of automatism, including speaking in tongues is sort of a form of automatism as well.
So in this whole installation and performance you're doing, a text is going to come out of this. So, initially I would think the text wouldn't be so coherent or consistent, but will it be or won't it be? Or how do you manage the assembly?
So the writers take the topic and write for 5 minutes. So you take 16 writings and then the typists type them, but they're also, we work in deep hypnosis, so the typists are instructed to type everything they see and fill in the gaps. So in a way, they're rewriting it, and then it goes to the editor who just cuts it apart phrase by phrase and
will change the meaning of grammar
and things. Yeah. So it's not a just jibber-jabber text. It takes on, there's surprising pairings of, outside the original topic, what 4 people will write about something traumatic, and so that will become one topic within the text. Not diligently, like if you had weeks to pair it up, but in a kind of instant random way. So word virus, still experimenting with ways to cut and paste these stories together.
And also, of course, trauma and violence and religion are also components of this, like so much of your work in the past.
This one is, it's in a different realm because I'm collaborating with Sean Griffin, who is a composer, opera director. And so we spent some time in the state of Guanajuato, Mexico this summer. I'm working on this piece. I'm writing music notations and just kind of reshaping the concept.
Conceptually, it seems very complicated to pull all that together.
It's like a machine.
I don't know how the whole hypnotherapy is even working. The hypnosis. That in itself is very, very complex, I would think.
It's a full, it's an old form since mesmerism. And it's a great teaching tool because you get you don't think, oh, I can't do that. You just like in your sleepwalking somnambulous days, you just do it. And I'm more interested in it as a teaching tool, but also as a way of a group of people to move together at the same pace.
Right.
Or in a strange pace, like if you've ever seen that Herzog film, Heart Glass.
Yeah.
Everybody's acting odd in their own hypnotic space. But if you work with a choreographer to sync it up, it changes how that. So I've played with that since like the mid-90s. That's not a new experiment, but it's an efficient one for me.
But in this particular work that you're building now collaboratively, how does your body play a role? Your own body and flesh has always played such an important role.
It is still there in presence and promenade, but not as physical as usual. This is a real departure. I've even invited my younger sister and my nieces, so it'll be the first family audience ever for me.
That's a good
30-something years,
point.
The first time. Now that I'm an elderly artist, they can come.
That's really great, Ron. So that's a good taking off point to talk about that because, of course, right, that is a kind of, right, the nieces and nephews can come and they will be traumatized, which potentially previously they could be, right? Isn't that the idea that the performance
right, it would have been
work
a,
in the past
you know,
was so extreme?
Yeah, it would have been illegal because of the nudity and other acts of penetration and mortification of the flesh. So it's not under 18 material.
Right. And so let's look back at and one of those. Before we go back there, when the current project that we're talking about, when will that be presented? Is there something we should be looking forward to on that? Or
this will be on January 25th. It's been developed with funds from the Mike Kelly Foundation. It's being co-produced by the Broad Museum and Pasadena Arts Council Volume. So there's a few agencies it's taken to pull this piece with 35 people together. And so it's going to be at the Cathedral of St. Viviana, which is you know, the oldest church in L.A. From mid-19th century, you know, by L.A. standards, that's prehistory. Oh, man. And, you know, since the early 80s when I lived in that neighborhood, and I would walk through it, and that particular corner of 2nd and Main was, it was almost the epicenter of Skid Row. It wasn't on a nickel, but just down. It was, I always thought, how could a pope stay here? And the, you know, the gnarliest, homeless, swirling, drug-selling corner ever. And then, of course, with gentrification, it's all, you know, it's a pretty wall. And it's more like a wedding factory since it was desanctioned, you know, because the Northridge earthquake, the tower was falling down. So it's been renovated and desanctioned. It looks desanctioned in a way. But also to have this early, early architecture is something.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And so when will that be presented?
That's January 25th, and we're doing two consecutive performances. So we're doing a 7 p.m. and a 9 p.m., and those could be found on the Broad Museum's website.
Okay. Great. I just wanted to get that information in there so it's clear so people can look for that because this interview is will be out.
Come to
that.
L.A., everybody.
Yeah, a lot of the listeners are in L.A. as well, so... So yeah, come to LA, so let's talk a little bit about a past piece. Since you are in a phase, what it sounds like from now on, do you think that the nieces will be able to come to the rest of your performances?
Absolutely not. Well, now they'll probably be old by the next piece, but no, I just the last few times I did really physical pieces. I just felt the need to go in a different direction for a while, but I tend to do big, ambitious pieces that are more in the realm of theater or opera, and then probably reacting to how what a headache that is, I go back to a solo piece or even a challenge of just being me and my body or me and my voice and something else. So, yeah, that'll probably be the next round. I have a few things coming up this year to chances to develop a solo piece again.
But also, as you get older, I would imagine your relationship to your body changes, right? You know, you're not 25, right? You're not 45, and you do such I don't know what to say, difficult things to your body that I would think that changes over time.
Right, but a lot of those things I do are often they come out of some kind of a question about. Like I think I did one of my most extreme performances on my 50th birthday at Participant and Invisible Exports in New York City. So I don't know. I think I rebel against that old saying, it's time to put it away.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good thing to rebel
against. There'll
be an
old like Mae West porno show coming up. Mm-hmm.
So let's walk through one of those Mae West porno shows coming up, or in the past. It could be the
I'll
that
go to the past one. Yeah,
okay,
I think whenever, you know, material's just been inspiring me for a long time, but, you know, it hasn't turned into a piece yet. The Solar Anus is one I premiered in 1999, and, you know, earlier in the 90s, I started reading George Bataille, and when I read The Solar Anus, suddenly I just saw a tattoo. Like, I want to tattoo my asshole. And then I just waited on that. And then that was part of the performance. It was actually video documentation of this Black Sun symbol, which also, you know, relates to the band Coil. So that's sort of this whole reference to the action photographs of Pierre Molinier. And, you know, after doing these big group pieces to actually do something, it was just me and these Love Spur high heels and a kind of Louis XIV crown. I just found this articulation of action within that piece that I had never found in a group piece, because it's kind of a total freedom to working alone, you know, not throwing off a co-performer.
Right.
And so that was where I started doing this sort of facelift look, like hooks went through my face into the crown and pulled it in this sort of garish way. So it became, I think a lot of it, you know, besides playing with the idea of the asshole, going back to the Bataille seat, but it was actually the idea of the mask, turning the face mask into a flesh mask of something else. And so it would translate into some kind of character I was channeling in that.
But also, it seems to be, you know, about pain. I mean, when I see images of that, as you say, lightly hooked through your face, pulling it back, you know, to a crown. It's you know, that's very it's very difficult to look at an image of that. I mean, I know it's not maybe meant to look at only in a photograph, but it's what I've seen of that. And
right.
And
here's what happens in a photo. Photo doesn't tell the truth. It tells a snapshot that metal right. face. Blood, but the live version is a gorgeous violin playing, kind of a bell percussion, and they're slid through seamlessly like I'm putting on makeup.
Mm.
So I'm actually work against the violence of the image.
Mm.
And I think pain is conceptual. I mean, you think, okay, pain, where you say, ouch, that hurts, you're like, putting a block against it, but then there's athletic pain and there's like beauty pain. I think pain is more complicated than just the ouch. And now we're kind of in an extreme normal period as well.
Extreme normal, yeah. I'm not sure what that is.
Everything's normal, no matter how extreme or cruel it is.
Yeah, that's hard to understand what that is. But in these, I mean, that's clear, you know, what you're saying, and then also how visual images fall short of showing what's going on. I mean, but people have
a different story, which is, that story is true also, but it's like a different story. And Solar Inks was really also me reacting against this 10 years of company work that directly addressed HIV/AIDS and became politicized and was probably, you know, some of the most internationally shown work I did. So going from work made in the heat of a political action, in the heat of, you know, a catastrophe like the AIDS pandemic, has so much energy inside of it. So then to go back and come back with a more philosophical question, within a piece is, it was a way of going forward, just like now, wanting to move away from the body for a piece. And also, I love working in things that are a little bit over my head. Like, I'm not a musicologist, I'm not a songbird, but, you know, I'll train with an opera singer and do one duet, because that's also this extreme embodiment of your persona. And an idea of fracturing it outwards.
Right. You talked about the performance at Invisible Exports, right, as your most extreme. Why was that your most extreme?
It was more the energy of it. It was called a self-obliteration. And it particularly was bloody, and I'm just, you know, surrounded by panes of glass mounted into a platform, and I'm in the posture of like an air freshener girl, so it's very like it's kind of demented in some ways, and it was a sort of crisis of 50, like,
right,
in this body. And also, I don't know, there's the Asian
you're nude in the posture of the girl, right?
Yes, nude with fake tan on and a really shiny blonde wig, like super blonde. So, and yet I don't consider it drag in another way. It's like affect without something's missing in it. It's something else as
right.
well. It's more elemental. So I look at all those things as elements of that Pamela Anderson on acid sort of channeling.
And so what happens in that performance? You're brushing your hair? I mean, let's just
brushing the hair, and then the wig is actually pierced on really deep. So then when the wig is taken off, you know, and I'm on blood thinners, I kind of bleed out while doing an action with these palettes of glass or sheets of glass.
But so what's happening is, I mean, you're brushing your hair. I mean, just to be clear, so the audience sees this, you're
brushing
your hair.
Brushing your hair, and
it's actually
the
dripping
releases
at your scalp. So there's blood coming out, and that blood is then being splattered
The brush, though. It's actually what the wig is held on with really thick needles, like thick spinal needles. So there's about, I don't know, 8 needles across my forehead holding the wig on so they can brush. I'm brushing hard, but, you know, just as the brush goes through your hair, like, hits the table really hard, so it has this like punctuation thing.
Right. But it looked like quite a lot of
that's meditative. It goes into like back combing, other story. And so, you know, there are often humorous elements, I think, in the work that's not talked about either, because you can't get over the description or something, just like the photo only tells you that one blip.
Well, that's true. That's why it's interesting talking about it as opposed to seeing it. There is you hear the humor in it more, perhaps, and the audience.